Welcome to Marketing Tips for Translators, a podcast with marketing and business tips and strategy specifically for freelance translators and interpreters. I'm your host, Tess Whitty, a longtime freelance translator with an education and professional background in marketing. Tune in to hear tips from my own experience or from other translators and industry experts. Hello and welcome to another episode of Marketing Tips for Translators. So glad to be bringing you more marketing and business tips for your freelance linguist business today. We're going to talk about the world as our market. How can we best use our access to a global market for our business? What are the challenges with working globally? Many of us tend to just work with clients in our own country, at least in the beginning, but the world is our oyster and we can actually find clients all over the world if we really want to. With me today, I have an experienced Hebrew, French, and Russian into English translator who gave a presentation at the last American Translators Association's conference about this. But before I introduce him, I want to give another listener shout out. This one is from Sam in Chicago. He or she says, best nuts and bolts podcast for marketing for translators. I've listened to every episode of this podcast and I can say there isn't a better podcast out there for the nuts and bolts how-to of marketing as a freelance translator. Tess knows what she's talking about and approaches it from all sides. The guests are consistently experts in the field and interesting in their own right. So thank you so much, Sam, for being a loyal listener and for taking the time to leave such a nice review. I really, really appreciate it, and I think you just made my day. It's not very often I hear from my loyal listeners unless I happen to meet them at a conference. Now back to the topic, accessing the global market for translators. I would like to welcome Stephen Rifkind to the podcast. Hello, Stephen. How are you today?
Very good. Good evening in your part of the world.
It's good morning here. Good morning and good evening to you.
Yeah, that's right.
So, okay, first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself and your career in the translation industry.
I'm like many translators, a product of many cultures. Mm-hmm. My father's American. I grew up in the United States. My mother is French. I lived there for a short period of time. And I've lived 30 years in Israel.
Your brother is French?
My mother is French.
Oh, mother.
Okay. Excuse me. A bit of a cold. I apologize.
How does this work?
No, my mother is French.
Okay.
And I've lived 30 years in Israel.
Okay.
And as a result, I can work three languages into English, the mm-hmm. French, Hebrew, and Russian. My education is eclectic. I have a BA in Russian. I have teaching credentials in French. I have an MBA, and I have legal studies. Mm. And I've also been an English lecturer at an engineering college in my town for 25 years. Okay. I've been a freelance translator for some 15 years now.
Okay. What brought you to Israel, and where does the Russian come in?
My BA is in Russian, but it turned out to be very useful in Israel because we have a lot of Russians here.
Okay.
What brought me to Israel?
Yeah.
Home is where the heart is.
Okay.
You go someplace and you feel contented there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a very logical thing. It's an emotional decision. Mm-hmm. And I've raised a daughter here. I've lived 30 years here mm-hmm. and wouldn't live anywhere else. But as they say, home is where you feel good.
Yes, yes. Okay, so and how long have you been a freelance translator, did you say?
15 years, of which about 8 years I've been full-time.
Okay, and what did you do before that?
I teach English to engineering students. I still do. Okay. So about 2 hours a day I teach.
Okay, all right. So you are a true global citizen. And at the ATA conference, you talked about how we can access the global market and manage our businesses. Do you think translators recognize the opportunities of a global market?
My feeling is most do not, for two reasons. First mm-hmm. of all, some are unaware it's out there. They focus on local or even or national elements, depending on the size of the country. Mm-hmm. But there's also this fear that of being paid. There's a fear of how does it work? How do I reach this market? That discourages people from trying. Mm-hmm. It's going out of the comfort zone. It's mm-hmm. a much more aggressive marketing. And many translators do have no background in marketing.
Yes.
So I think that that's one major factor.
Which is one of the reasons I do what I do, train other translators in marketing.
In general, translators lack a lot of the business skills they need. But we learn on the job, I think.
Yes, yes. And traditionally, the market wasn't as global as it used to be. It's just with internet that it has opened up a lot. So maybe it's a learning or a development process too. So
it's also been a bit of a one-way street because the translators from the lower nations with a lower standard of living have been advertising lower rates and people complain. Mm-hmm. So people see that as a sort of a negative, the internet is a negative feature instead of a positive opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How is it a positive opportunity?
Because it allows a translator, it makes geography irrelevant. Mm-hmm. I can work with businesses anywhere in the world. It's a matter of time zone, effectively mm-hmm. speaking. And I can access resources anywhere in the world. The only thing I cannot do is I cannot physically meet people in the world.
Yeah.
But a relatively small amount of our business is physical meeting.
Mm-hmm.
We live on a internet-based, email-based marketing. Mm-hmm. So my physical presence is almost irrelevant, mm-hmm. and the clients feel no need to see me or you or anybody else. They don't really want to see us anyway. So in that sense, it opens the door up to places I can never get to physically.
Mm-hmm. And right now, you are in Israel and I'm in the United States and we're talking together.
That's
right. Okay, what about the differences? You kind of touched on this. Are there differences in demand and prices depending on different regions?
Yeah, there are two factors that you have to keep in mind. One is cost of living. And cost mm-hmm. of living affects the minimum income a translator needs. And on the other hand, the minimum rates an agency or an end client can pay. And there are huge differences. For example, what is expensive? If I say 30 euro, well, in Germany or Northern Europe, 30 euro doesn't get you very far, or mm-hmm. $30. If you happen to be in Turkey or Africa, that is a very expensive job.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we quote prices, we often think of how much is that inexpensive, is that cheap or expensive. We need to think of the target audience perception of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me to quote a 50 euro to a German company is nothing. That means nothing to them. It's a very irrelevant amount for a very small job. But there's that factor. The other factor that kicks in is exotic, which is to say that I don't have a lot of Hebrew English business in Israel because I have a lot of Hebrew English competition here, and. Mm-hmm. And they're willing to go half my rates, two-thirds of my rates.
Mm-hmm.
But if I work in Europe, I work in the United States, I have very little competition.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have less work there. That's true. But I get work from the Philippines, from Asia, from all over the world. I look for the work there, and I have an exotic language. If I relate to the American audience, at the conference, one-third of the people, I think, were Spanish-English. And the competition looks terrible.
Yes.
I don't know a single Spanish-English translator in Israel. To give you some idea, there's not a lot of business here. But there is business sometimes. There were three or four Spanish combinations in the last month, and there's simply not many people who do it because we don't have that population here.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is to bring your services where you are exotic and you have very little competition, and therefore you can get higher rates.
Mm-hmm. So it would be an idea for Spanish into English translators in the United States to look at the Israeli market then.
Definitely, or the Asian market, mm-hmm. because Hong Kong and Singapore are major centers of commerce. So are, for example, it could be Shanghai or Beijing. There could be some opportunities. I wouldn't go beyond those cities. There are major commercial centers that have where the translator won't face a lot of competition once they get established there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I can see that. So, for example, I translate English into Swedish, and I don't have many clients in Sweden because the competition there is so high, and people can meet people in person there. But, for example, here in the United States, the competition is not very high for me.
Yeah, and we call it being exotic. When you're exotic, you can mm-hmm. you can ask for more money. Mm-hmm. That's basically how it works. So you have to find markets that can pay you decent rates that you would like to be paid, and your services are also more valued, which may be not maybe where you live.
Yes. In your case. Not necessarily. Okay, so I have found a market where I would be exotic. How do I use it to my best advantage? Or how do I go about it?
There's several ways. First of all, using a directory, the ProZ directory, you can try to reach agencies in that country because there is a way to do direct communication. It's a very slow process.
Mm-hmm.
I have noticed in the last year and a half, Facebook for end clients has become very effective. In other words, try to find Facebook pages in that country. And you will. It does take a bit of time to skim through things, but you will see jobs come up. And if you are on that Facebook in Israel, there are three translator forums, mm-hmm. and jobs are coming up all the time, mm-hmm. and they're in lots of interesting combinations. And if you happen to be monitoring, you can get work. You can get work through them.
And other when ways, you say forums, do you mean on Facebook then?
On Facebook.
Okay.
Okay. I am investing time in LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Marketing is a long-term process, yeah. So I'm not assuming any immediate results. Mm-hmm. But I think the LinkedIn opens up to some of the decision makers in these markets, which is very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
Other things is associations. I belong to the French, American, and Israeli Association,
mm-hmm.
Because the association puts me on the map in that country, and I get work by being a member of that association. I think, for example, in France, I'm the only Hebrew English translator in the SFT, the French Translators Association, which is where I'd like to be.
Yes. Okay. Good. That's a good point. I'm also a member of the Swedish Association, the American, and the UK Association. So.
I think one point which cannot be emphasized enough is the person must have an internet presence.
Mm-hmm.
A good site. If you can write posts, or if you have a blog that puts you there, you have to be available on the internet. So that if someone in a foreign country puts a search for your combination, or even gets your name, they can find out without working who you are. Mm-hmm. There are too many translators there who are invisible mm-hmm. in terms of the internet. And if you're invisible, and there's no way someone abroad will ever hear about you.
Yeah, yeah. And even if you contact them directly yourself and don't have a presence on like for on a website or any of like on LinkedIn, they would probably not trust you hiring you either, right?
That's right. There's always the. I call new clients fish, because you throw a rock in the ocean, sometimes you might hit a fish.
Mm-hmm.
getting fish is a bit of luck. Sometimes it's a Friday night and you're willing to work the weekend, you get the job. Mm-hmm. But generally, it's the most important thing is really to look professional. I think the key in getting work abroad, so have people trust you, is to have all the proper credentials available and easy to access. Mm-hmm. I compare it as how do we pick an accountant? I cannot judge the work of an accountant. I look for experience. I look for associations. I look for any certificates the person did, courses they might have taken, because mm-hmm. I have to figure out, does this accountant know what they're talking about? Mm-hmm. Here's the same way with translators. We have to give as much positive signs that we are professional.
Yeah.
And if that's...
Sorry?
No, that's it. That's the point.
Okay. But marketing globally, you know, we are many different cultures. What cultural differences should we think about when we market globally when it comes to cultural differences?
The two aspects I notice the most are communication and negotiating. Mm-hmm. When I communicate a client in Israel, I use their first name. Mm-hmm. If you call a woman Miss in Israel, they get very upset. It's like when I'm old, it mm-hmm. has that implication here. Mm-hmm. My students use my first name with me. I live in an informal country. Mm-hmm. If I'm writing to Israel or Italy or maybe in more Mediterranean countries, I may use first names. Nobody takes offense. Mm-hmm. By contrast, if I'm writing to Northern Europe, I would use Mr. or Doctor, or I would err on the side of formality because these are much more formal countries. The United States, I tend to use Mr. because though I hear that's changing too, but I rather err on the side of formality with the United States. And if they want to use their first name, then I'll switch. So how we address someone, we have to be aware that think of the country and what is acceptable there. And the other aspect, of course, is negotiations. Some countries do not have any culture of negotiations in that the price they offer is really the price they mean, mm-hmm. and it's yes or no. Mm-hmm. I work with several Hong Kong companies, and they negotiate every job. They have to offer me less, and I say, no, this is it, and they say, fine. It's a necessity. I live in the mm-hmm. Middle East. Mm-hmm. So the Middle East, Asia, Turkey, they have to negotiate, and you have to realize when it's a real negotiation and when it's really a yes-no. And if it's a yes or no, then you say that's what you want. If it's a negotiation, you might go maybe a cent or higher than you really want to accept. So mm-hmm. that way they can get what they want, which is they lowered your price. Mm-hmm. This is the shuk, open market mentality in many places. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I guess, going into Mexico into an open market. You know, the price they say is not really what they want.
Yes. So, but there's no way of knowing this unless you learn by doing, right? Or reading up on culture.
I think you can basically sort of say Asia is very much negotiating. So is the Middle East, high negotiation. Southern Europe Northern Europe is no negotiation, and very rarely is the United States negotiation, in my experience.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You could be really wrong on that one. So I take it as a general rule, and if I'm wrong, it's on a small scale, mm-hmm. but it's an expectation. Mm-hmm. You have to be aware that's how they play the game, and they're setting the rules. So I'll play any game they like as long as they get work.
Yeah. Okay. What about getting paid? That's one of the fears. For example, I know that there's a misconception that some people don't want to work in the United States because they would be paid by check. And that is slowly being phased out. But what about getting paid in other countries and cultures? How should we go about it?
There is the physical element of payment and being paid at all. In the physical amount of payment, it is complicated. The banks win. If you're fortunate to be able to do so, you can open a European account for euro and a local account. That could be done. There's PayPal. In PayPal, there's something called an e-check where you don't pay a fee. which ask customers to do that one. That really helps you a lot. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, PayPal does not charge you to send money to your opening bank account when you open PayPal. Mm-hmm. That is an option. But they do get you on the exchange rate. The European banks are big thieves. I strongly recommend if you're doing a lot of foreign business, go to your local bank you're working with and negotiate. And you say, look, I'm getting a lot of foreign currency. What can we negotiate rates?
For me, here where I live, the it's very expensive to go through my local bank. So what I did is I opened a TransferWise account.
Yeah.
And now I have a U.S. account there and a Euro account through TransferWise.
That also works. It really depends on a country basis. Mm-hmm. We recently switched banks and sat with the bank for two and a half hours negotiating fees, essentially. Mm-hmm. Because both my wife and I are translators, and we get and most of our money is foreign exchange. So it's really important to negotiate those fees, and they wanted our business, so we were to make it a bit better. Mm-hmm. I have found, for example, that through the U.S. banks, many of them have low or no ATM fees. So if you get, if you have a U.S. account and you get and you go to a foreign ATM, you're able just to lose on the exchange rate element, yes. Not on the ATM fees. I just found a bank that has zero ATM fee.
That is actually the best way now. If you travel, for me, if I travel to Sweden or any other place in Europe, to just get cash from an ATM when I'm there.
Exactly, and that is how I access my U.S. My dollar income. I use an ATM.
Mm-hmm.
Because the U.S. banks are, because of the competitive situation in the United States, they're less thieves than the Europe. For lack of other term to put it, mm-hmm. You know. But look, everybody will get their percentages. The question is to limit it as much as possible. Now, the other problem, of course, is scams. Scams are becoming a big issue. Mm-hmm. I admit that I fell this year to it, and I can give one very strong piece of advice. If you get a request for work from a company you do not know, look at the email. If it says Gmail, is avoid it. All agencies have their own website and everything else. They do not use Gmail.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain scammers who are taking perfectly identical email signatures. Everything looks wonderful. The only difference is Gmail.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little detail when you're tired and you're not paying attention and you're in a hurry. But if you're really not sure, write or call up the agency itself and ask, do you have a project manager with the name of such and such? And then you can feel very assured. The fact is really that there's not a big issue of actual payment from foreign agencies. They pay. Sometimes they pay 45 days, 60 days, but they all pay. I've never had a problem in 15 years of not being paid by someone.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of timing sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is not, I mean, I think the scam you were talking about is that somebody is pretending to be an agency that is known, but they're not.
Yes.
Another way, if you haven't heard about anybody before, is to, I always ask for their physical address and contact information and a website.
Yes, I agree. All reputable agencies have websites. But again, the problem with the addresses that are completely accurate, everything looks great, everything looks perfect, except
mm-hmm.
the Gmail,
mm-hmm.
and that's so. So that's at this point the biggest threat, and a lot of people are being caught by it, but it is avoidable. Just a little bit.
Okay, very good tip. Okay. Now, this question I ask all interviewees. What marketing method works really well for you right now in your business?
Curiously enough, I find that the Facebook forums, I'm getting about 2 to 3 new end clients a month from Facebook forums.
From group?
Yes.
Groups?
Okay. From various groups. And...
And how do you use them then? Do you say that you're an Israeli, French, Russian into English translator and just market on them? Or do you participate in the discussions? Or how do you use them?
In these forums, a lot of people will write, I need a birth certificate translated, or I need several documents recently. Mm-hmm. Someone said they needed some articles translated. And if it's something within my something that I can do, I send a message and I tailor it to what they want in mm-hmm. Three sentences, mm-hmm. and give my email, and I always say I would welcome the chance to make a price proposal, to make an offer, and I have a very high success rate. Again, if you make the key is to have all the right signs. People are looking. When they don't know anything about the quality and they don't know who's good or bad, you give them the information they need. If you're accredited or if you're anything that makes you look more professional than others, and it's not just communication, but you give them information in two or three sentences that at least you know what you're doing, because they have no ability to really judge it.
So what these groups, are you talking about groups where you're target clients hang out, or translation, or groups where other translators
hang out? I'm doing both. I'm getting a lot of stuff from translator columns, but I'm actually doing both now. I'm actually aiming at the customers. I'm starting to work in immigration groups because I do a lot of official documents. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to aim realtors because I do a lot of leases. Mm-hmm. My switch in marketing is I'm now trying to go to where my customers are. And I think that's something that I'm starting to do now, mm-hmm. but even the translator groups, in a lot of people who need a translation and don't know where to go to, and clients in particular, will go to, oh, is there a translation group? Hell, very good. They'll ask someone to put their notice in, or they'll mm-hmm. put the notice themselves in. And there's probably within the two major Israeli Hebrew sites, there about three offers a day of work in some language combination or another. Mm-hmm. Not always relevant and not always what I want to do, but mm-hmm. this stuff is going on. And a lot of it are housewives and people who need a translation, and they're very comfortable with Facebook. That is the change in the last 5 years, mm-hmm. is that Facebook is no longer for their people's children. It's for them. That's where mm-hmm. they get the information. Mm-hmm. And I think in terms of marketing, we have to roll with that. If that's where the end customers are, then you can reach them anywhere in the world if you can get on those sites, because you don't have to visit them physically. They don't have to see you. And I think that's
an interesting point. I have not used Facebook groups. So how often are you on them? Because you need to see these posts.
I monitor them. I mean, I monitor them sometimes. Between a sentence, I need to clear my brain, so I'll take a look. I don't make comments. I'm not really interested in the social aspect of it. And mm-hmm. I'm not interested in insulting people, or that's much less interesting to me. It's a waste of time.
So but about daily, then, would you say?
I can check it three or four times a day, because you have to move fast on them. But it's just a quick look. It's just I check the first three or four on it. Anything come up in the last hour or two? Mm-hmm. Nothing. It takes me all of 10 seconds to really scan the last hour or two. Speed is important on this, because a lot of people pick the first one.
Yeah. Okay. Great point. Thank you, Stephen. Where can we find out more about you and your services?
I am on LinkedIn. I am on Prosy. I am a Prosy certified. Mm-hmm. My site is gaguzia-translations.com.
We will put a link to it in the show notes.
Very good. Very good. Thank you. I'll end this by telling you why Gaguzia. See, I like everything. Uh-huh. My name was, in the year I was born, about one third of all boys got my name. And anybody who has a common name understands how problematic that is.
Yes.
When you want an email, I didn't want Stephen7943 because nobody remembers that.
Yes.
So I wanted the theory of something that people would remember. Mm-hmm. And in the good old days of the breakup of the Soviet Union, everybody wanted independence. Mm-hmm. And within Moldavia, which is Moldova, I think in English, a very small country, there is a Turkish tribe called the Gagauz, and they wanted independence. And I thought it was the funniest name I've ever heard. So I came up with Gagauzia translations as a as something that people can remember, and people generally do. And yes. There's no competition for it either.
Interesting. Interesting. Very good. Okay, thank you. And thank you for these insights and for coming onto the call and sharing your presentation and all the tips. I think they're very valuable.
Thank you for taking the time and effort. I appreciate it a lot.
I think that we sometimes don't think about expanding into other parts of the world, but the world is truly, like I said earlier, our oyster these days, and we can benefit from working globally in so many ways. Even payments are becoming easier. The internet has shrunk our world, and we're no longer tied to the national boundaries for doing business. But just as any business going international, we need to pay attention to the cultural differences, of course, when it comes to communication and, like you said, negotiation. I've traveled in many countries where I feel very uncomfortable because I have to negotiate.
Yes. By the way, 30 years in Israel, I'm still lousy at it. So
okay.
It's cultural. I'm not very good at it.
Yeah. Okay, and thank you also to everyone for tuning in today. If you found this episode useful, please take a moment to share it on social media. You can do that from the show notes at marketingtipsfortranslators.com/229. And there you can also check out any links that we mentioned in this episode and show notes and the episode sponsor. And you can, of course, leave comments or questions. Okay, have a great week, everyone, and I look forward to seeing you in the next episode. And thanks again, Stephen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Marketing Tips for Translators. I hope you found some good tips to apply to your freelance career. If you did, a great way to show this is by leaving a review on your favorite podcast listening app or to share the episode with other colleagues. Do you have a topic, question, or a guest you would like to hear about here? Send me an email to podcast@marketingtipsfortranslators.com.